Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
episode 2 of Gottfried Leibniz, a philosopher, and previous episode we talked about his life, his fantastic achievements, and some of his basic influences. Now we're actually going to go in a bit more depth here. We're reaching through the Stanford Encyclopedia, online encyclopedia on Leibniz, which I've talked about before. And so this is episode, or their third point. Some of the fundamental principle of Leibniz's philosopher. Leibniz asserts mondology, quote, "Our reasonings are based on two great principles, that of contradiction and of sufficient reason." Okay. So, monad is something produced by Pythagoras very early. It's a simple dot in Greek, and we're going to see a bit more into it than I've ever understood. To these two great principles could be added four more. My God, the principle of best, the predicate in notion principle, the principle of identity of indiscernibles, and the principle of continuity. God, that's a mind-bender. In relation amongst these principles is more complicated than one might expect. Leibniz sometimes suggests the principle of the best and the predicate in notion principle can be said to ground his two great principles. So the two great principles are that of contradiction and sufficient reason. Oh God, this is going to be hard. At other times, however, all four principles seem to work together in a system of circular implication. So there's two base ones, and he's got, no, I don't quite understand. And while the principle of identity of indiscernibles is often presented as a contemporary discussion in analytic metaphysics as a standalone axiom, Leibniz tells us it follows from the two great principles. Finally, the principle of the law of continuity is actually a principle that Leibniz takes from his work in mathematics and applies it to an infinite hierarchy of monads. In a world that is the quality of their perceptions, it appears to derive only tenuously support the principle of sufficient reason. So let's take a little break here. So a monad, if you look it up, it's got a different definite symbol, and it's sort of like the core of what a point is, and it's got a mathematical meaning there. And really, Leibniz is really using monads just incredibly in a complex way. Now, there's all up six principles, and now there's the two principles that already there, that's contradiction and sufficient reason. Then added to that is the principle of best and predicate in notion principle, whatever that means. And then there's two subsidiary principles, identity of indiscernibles and principle of continuity. It almost hurts me to look there. So how they are structured, like a tree diagram, is not really put out here and how they're related. However, we're going to get a big lashing of it. So the principle of best is his third principle, first two being contradiction, sufficient reason. The principle of best is what we're going to look at here first. Okay, I know this is confusing. It's confusing for you. It's probably confusing for me. It is confusing for me. It's probably confusing for you. 3.1, the principle of the best. Leibniz represented a number of arguments for the existence of God, which represent great contributions to philosophical theology and which will be discussed below. One of the most basic principles of his system is that God is always acts for the best. While this is generally treated as an axiom, the opening course of Discourse of Metaphysics does present something of an argument for it. God is an absolutely perfect thing. The power of knowledge are perfections, and insofar as they belong to God, they do not have limits. Whence it follows that God, possessing supreme and infinite wisdom, acts in the most perfect manner, not only metaphysically, but also morally speaking. Okay, this is crazy as. That's him. This might not appear a surprising claim from a theist, someone who believes in God, but it's not obvious that God must always act for the best or even create the best world. And Leibniz sometimes implicitly, sometimes explicitly appeals to the principle of his metaphysics, most notably when he is employing the principle of sufficient reason. Indeed, when it comes to the creation of the world, the sufficient reason of God's choice of world is that it is the best of all possible. Worlds. In other words, in the case of the principle of sufficient reason is essentially the principle of the best. Okay, so it fundamentally gets here that these people are people entering this enlightenment who still want to cling to God, and it's really interesting the interaction between faith and enlightenment produces these fantastic philosophies. Okay, so that's the principle of the best. It doesn't get a letter code. We now come up to the predicate in notion principle, the PIN. Leibniz has a very distinctive notion of truth, one which underlies much of his metaphysics. But this notion of truth goes back to Aristotle's organ, or posterior analytics, as Leibniz himself says, and is also present in Arnold and Nicole's Logic in the Art of Thinking, book, whatever it is, chapter 6. As Leibniz puts it in a letter, Arnold, quote, "In every true affirmative proposition, whether necessarily or contingent, universal or particular, the notion of predicate is in some way included in that of the subject. Predicum inest subjecto. Otherwise, I do not know what truth is." Which is, you can see that Descartes saying truth, you just know it's true. It's just got a feeling of truth through it. It's just so obvious. The truth is really, really obvious. Now, this is a bit more different. I wish I could understand that. As he tells us in the Primary Truths in the Discord of Metaphysics, many things follow from the predicate in notion principle, including what he believes to be correct analysis of necessity and contingency. So just let's reread that one a bit. The notion of the predicate is in some way included in that of the subject. I must admit, I really don't know what predicate means, so that's where I'm falling at. So these are words, you can imagine me trying to do this in memory and not having the internet to help me. So PIN, so we don't know, I don't know what predicate means. 3.3, sorry, I'm just podcasting to you. 3.3, Principle of Contradiction, PC. Leibniz also follows Aristotle in placing great emphasis on the principle of identity and the principle of contradiction, which I just got me confused because isn't that the one of his first? I'm just going back here, sorry mate. Okay, so it's really his principle of best is actually his principle of sufficient reason, and principle of contradiction is from Aristotle. Okay. PC states simply, a proposition cannot be true and false at the same time, and therefore A is A and cannot be not A. Which, of course, logically, I think we've... the Boolean logic. Just really, really logically thinking there. I was trying to think of this philosopher. Jesus, my head's really spinning. I know the person, he did so much work on it. I just can't think of it. I'll really have to go back and reread this This is great being slightly demented, because then you get to go back and reread things, and you're at levels that people don't even understand. Okay. According to Leibniz, the primary truths of his metaphysical systems are identities, but in a striking move, he combines PC with PIN, the principle of contradiction with the principle of predicate in notion, whatever that means, and asserts in primary truths that, quote, all remaining truths are reduced to primary truths with the help of definitions, that is, through the resolution of notions. Furthermore, the combination of PC and PIN will mean that, since in any true proposition, the predicate is contained explicitly or implicitly within the object, subject. this is so for all affirmative truths, whether universal or peculiar, necessarily or contingent. Leibniz will use this seemingly innocuous principle to draw profoundly strong metaphysical conclusions about the nature and substance of modality. Yeah, so you can sort of, I can almost feel this, like he's using the scholastic engine. He's actually got a brain big enough to do a scholastic engine of it. So he's actually doing ultra-scholasticism, as far as I can see. So, again, is about the nature of substance and modality. The principle of sufficient reason, which is another basic one, PSR, I'll just go back. The principle of best doesn't get a code letter, PSR. The principle of sufficient reason, PSR, is a classic form, simply that nothing is without a reason, or there is no effect without a cause. Mm-hmm. As Leibniz remarks, this principle must be considered one of the greatest and most fruitful of all human knowledge, for upon it is built. A great part of metaphysics, physics and moral science. I'd probably agree with him there. In the principle of nature and grace, Leibniz suggests that the claim that nothing takes place without sufficient reason means that nothing happens in such a way that it's impossible for someone with enough information to give a reason to why it is so and not otherwise. In monadology and elsewhere, however, Leibniz frankly admits, quote, that most of the time, these reasons cannot be known to us. That's a little bit interesting in terms of information theory and the amount of information that can be contained in an object, and that you can't destroy information. While the idea that every event must have a cause and there must be a reason why everything is so, and no otherwise again might not seem novel, it is the connection that Leibniz sees between this principle and the other metaphysical principles that is noteworthy. According to Leibniz, PSR, which is, must actually follow from PIN, which, you know, my brain's gone, what is PSR? You probably can't remember, you people. PSR is the principle of sufficient reason, and PIN is the predicate and notion. Okay, for if there were truth that had no reason, there would be a proposition whose subject did not contain a predicate, which is a violation of Leibniz's theory of truth. Well, I just wonder what about mathematical truths, or the actual, if you fold this on itself. Okay, the principle of identity of indiscernibles, PII, PC, and PSR, so sufficient reason, principle of condition, may seem innocent enough, but Leibniz's other well-known principle, the principle of identity of indiscernibles, is more controversial. It is in one of Leibniz's formulations, PII states that, quote, it is not true that two substances can remember each other completely and differ only in the number. I sort of get that. Your quantum wave functions are absolutely identically the same. It's one of those things you can't put a mark on an electron and say, that's my electron. Yeah, blood oath it is. Because it's just a wave. Okay, in other words, two things share all the properties. They are identical. For all F, Fx corresponds to Fy, therefore X equals Y. What's particularly important to note, however, is that Leibniz is adamant that certain kinds of properties are excluded from the list of properties that could count for the difference-making properties. Chief among these are spatio-temporal properties. This is what Leibniz means in part when he asserts that there is no purely extrinsic relational determinations. Therefore, it's not the case that there could be two chunks of matter that are quantitatively identifiable, identical, but existing in different locations. Ah, okay, well, that's true for quantum mechanics. An electron, or every electron, is absolutely identical, or you could say there's just one electron in the universe, but every electron is absolutely physically identical. Okay, so, and this is where your quantum physics come in. In Leibniz's view, any such extrinsic must be founded on intrinsic differences, as he puts it in the new essays. Now, this is going to do my head in. I'm not going to do a German accent for it. Although time and place, i.e. the relations to what lies outside, do distinguish for us things which we could not easily tell apart by reference to themselves alone, things are nevertheless distinguishable in themselves. Thus, according to diversity of things is accompanied by a diversity of time and place. Time and place do not constitute the core identity and diversity because they... different times and places impress different states upon things, in which it can be added that it is by means of things that we must distinguish one time and one place from another, rather than vice versa. Okay, well, this is where quantum mechanics is so fascinating. There is also the related, though uncontroversial, principle of indiscernibility of identicals. Oh, geez, that's doing my head in. The principle of identity of indiscernibles, and now the indiscernibility of identicals. If two things are identical, then they share all the properties. The combination of these two principles are something called Leibniz's law. Two things are identical if, and only if they share all properties. Sometimes, unfortunately, only the principle of indiscernibility of identicals is so called. Okay, so just going back, it's the principle is the identity of the principle of identity of indiscernibles, and his other one is the principle of indiscernibility of identicals. Just let's get through that one again. The identity of indiscernibles and the indiscernibility of identicals. Oh, that's really doing my head in. It's also interesting to note that primary truths, the correspondence by Clark Leibniz presents PII not as the bedrock axiom of his system, but as a consequence of PC and PSR. Briefly, one way to sketch the argument is this. Now, let's go. So, he has made some fundamental classical physics assumptions, which is, you know, everyone would do. One, suppose there were two indiscernible individuals, A and B, in our world, W. If this was the case, there must also be a possible world, W star, which A and B can be switched, which is quantum mechanics. But if the case were, then God would have had no reason for choosing W over W star. God must have a reason for acting as he does. Therefore, our original proposition must be false. There must be no two indiscernible individuals in our world. Well, So, unfortunately, he's wrong and he's disproved God. I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. I just cannot believe it, because we do have indiscernible electrons, and therefore his proof of God, his disproved God. But he's assumed that God is true. Okay. Now it's said that the above Leibniz excluded purely extrinsic determinations or relational properties, or the kinds of properties that can be constitutive of an individual. To allow purely extrinsic denominations would be to accept the possibility that two things could be indiscernible in terms of the relational properties while being identical in terms of their intrinsic properties. For the relational properties would not follow from the intrinsic properties. Again, if relational properties were allowed to factor into the nature of an individual, then pH, which is, it's wrong, P2, where it's indiscernible. Gee, that's hurting. PII is identity of indiscernibles. Would be relatively weak. Of course, two things that exist in different spatio-temporal locations are distinct, and that is what Leibniz admits in the passage of the new essays above. But if we follow Leibniz into excluding such relational properties as difference, making properties, and reflects on the argument above, then we see the worlds are distinguished in terms of intrinsic properties of individuals and what difference has bearing on the creative relative greatness or perfection of the world. Again, let A and B be indiscernible by occupying a mirror positions in W and W star. How would we ever say W was more worthy of God's choice than W star? We could not. There you must reason why A is here and B is there. And this reason is, can I just say, quantum tunneling? It's just, gosh. In a phase between two places. There's the reason why A is here and B is there. And this reason has to do with the intrinsic properties of A and B. In other words, even if there's relational properties, it must be somehow derivative of the intrinsic properties of the substance. As you shall see, Leibniz employs this principle in a range of arguments against the mind of tabula rasa, against atomism, against Newton's absolute space, and so on. For more of his subjects, consult the entry of indiscernibles. What I was going to say is that essentially, that's what he's saying. He's saying atoms can't exist because atoms are absolutely identical. That's the whole thing of atoms. And, again, how does he... The other consequence is Newtonian space. So he obviously has really crash-tackled in just a bizarre way modern science, but for very good reason. All hail to him. 3.6, the principle of continuity. According to Leibniz, there are, quote, two famous labyrinths where our reason very often goes astray. First concerns human freedom, and the latter the composition of continuum. Leibniz, however, thought that he had found a way out of each labyrinth, and his solution to the problem of continuum is related ultimately to the maxim of the law that employs not only mathematical writings, but also his metaphysics. As he puts it in the preface of the new essays, nothing takes place suddenly and is in my great and best confirmed maxims is that nature never makes leaps, which is go suck that boar. And this is true. Nature never does make leaps. And this is why ball stuff is completely rubbish. More exactly, Leibniz believes the law or principle implies that any change passes through some intermediate change, that there is actually infinity of things. The principle of continuity will be employed to show that no motion can arise from a state of complete rest, and that, quote, noticeable perceptions arise by degrees from one which are too minute to be noticed, ibid, so it's said. Okay, we're on to number four. This is a bit short, but I'll just have a look at four before launching into it. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.